Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Back in August, we recorded an episode that was the Cynic's Guide to the 2018-2019 season for U.S. men's national team players. We talked about worst-case scenarios for them. Some of them were kind of funny, and most of them were pretty realistic, at least we thought. So we're going to revisit those scenarios for several players and see how accurate we were. So without further ado, Greg, let's start with Christian Pulisic, our Lord and Savior, Christian Mate Pulisic.
All right, Christian Pulisic, back in August, we kind of pegged the worst-case scenario as there were rumors flying around at him just like there are now. We kind of pegged the worst case scenario as him making that $100 million move to Real Madrid, being buried in on their depth chart, and then making a January move over to a middling EPL team like Bournemouth at a massive discount. Where did Pulisic actually land, Bells?
So it wasn't that. None of that happened, obviously. But I think sort of our when we took our tongues out of our cheeks and gave the sort of realistic worst case scenario, I think it was just he struggles, gets relegated to being a 20-minute sub for BVB, and then they dump him in January to Bournemouth for $12 million. Again, that the second part of that hasn't happened. The first part sort of has happened, at least in the Bundesliga. He is clearly second choice to Jadon Sancho, which is kind of what we feared might happen.
Yeah, we didn't have Jadon Sancho necessarily in mind, but we definitely were worried. I think maybe the word plateau would have been used.
Yeah, like he didn't develop the attacking maturity that he has lacked in the past, and wasn't consistent enough to overcome the knock on his finishing. And I think those were what happened. You know, he's still not quite enough of a threat to score goals himself, and isn't quite precise enough in the attacking third to create chances for other players, even though he's just as brilliant as ever dribbling by people.
Yeah, and luckily this sort of realistic worst case scenario that's panned out hasn't meant that he's been relegated to zero minutes. In part because Dortmund are doing so well that they have a loaded schedule to keep guys rotating in.
Right. He's gotten a lot of minutes in the Champions League, and he probably will get – I would assume he'll start tomorrow for Dortmund. I forget who they're playing, but they're playing on Tuesday.
Bottom of the table for Dusseldorf, I believe.
Yeah, bottom of the table, but for our beloved Hannover 96. Hannover. Right. And so there are a lot of transfer rumors. You know, he's been linked with Liverpool and Chelsea most vigorously in the transfer press. I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm definitely not like as much of a sky is falling on Pulisic. I'm not in that camp for sure. I recognize that he hasn't turned into the superstar that everyone's wanted him to be. But he's still got a solid little spot carved out for himself for now. It'd be really exciting to see him move just because there'd be a lot of intrigue and drama. But I'll be good either way if he stays at BVB or if he jumps over to Liverpool.
Yeah, I'll be good either way too. I almost would prefer he stay at BVB and produce for Dortmund. And I think there's a good chance he'll produce on Tuesday. Like something good could happen.
Really, what I want is I want him to win a medal. I want him to win a champion's medal. So whether he wins the Bundesliga with BVB or whether he wins Champions League with BVB or Liverpool, he could win the Premier League with Liverpool. Like anything where he's standing on a podium collecting a winner's medal would be a pretty great end of a year for Pulisic.
Absolutely. And it's worth noting, Dortmund is one of the best teams in Europe right now. Undefeated in the Bundesliga, breezed through their Champions League group. They face Tottenham. We'll talk about that later in the knockout round. With Sancho, Paco Alcacer, and Marco Reus, they have a lot of very quality attackers, and the fact that Pulisic is even in that mix is good, you know, from an American's perspective.
Yeah. So again, the worst case that sort of panned out with the plateauing, not the worst overall situation to be in for a 20-year-old.
Let's move on to McKennie, Weston McKennie. The worst case for him was he can't clean up his occasional looseness in possession and is relegated to spot minutes for Schalke. What actually happened?
Well, luckily for Weston McKennie, Schalke don't play a lick of possession soccer. so being loose in possession is not a demerit for their system. What's kind of happened is he started out as a locked-in starter, which was really cool to see. Scored some important goals for them in Champions League, helped see them into the Champions League knockout stage. But of late, his role seems to be undecided. And I don't know if that's congested fixtures or if they're just searching for answers because Schalke have been kind of abysmal despite advancing in the Champions League.
Yeah, it's been a tale of two competitions for them. They've been pretty good in the Champions League, never transcendent, and then terrible in the Bundesliga. Now, McKennie was injured in that camp, that dreadful U.S. men's national team camp, and then missed a couple fixtures. And then when he came back, he played striker for Schalke, and that was, you know, sort of a predictably clumsy thing to witness. Not terrible, but, you know, it's just he's not a striker. And then he's been spot minutes or not coming off the bench, I think, for two straight fixtures maybe. Again, Schalke has a game on Wednesday, this sort of congested end-of-the-year Bundesliga schedule, three games in 1 week. He's going to start, I'm assuming he'll start on Wednesday, and maybe if not Wednesday, then probably Saturday. I feel fine about McKennie's spot. I mean, the worst case scenario, you could argue that it came true, but I think it'd be a little harsh to say that. He's been relegated to spot minutes. I think he's in the mix.
I was worried that he wouldn't play. Like, he wouldn't play this year. They just finished second. They were going into the Champions League. I was worried that they were going to deem him insufficient for the sort of their ambitions. And that definitely has been the case. I think he's got over 900 minutes in all competitions. So again, for a 19, 20-year-old kid to be playing that often in the Bundesliga and Champions League, it's a pretty good, again, another solid situation despite sort of Schalke's,
badness.
They're not pleasing. They're not pleasing to the eye.
No, they do. They're doing some sort of futuristic dystopian stuff. I think I've used those words before. trying to win second balls and create moments of transition. It hasn't worked. I think they have 14 goals all year in the Bundesliga. I think they're the second lowest scoring in the team in the league. Maybe they pick up a striker in the January transfer window and that transforms their prospects. Who knows?
That's what they need. They need some attacking edge. That's my one worry, is that since they didn't really reload and are in a situation where Weston McKennie is one of their, you know, better players to the point that he's starting a lot of games, and they've sort of decided we aren't good enough to play this way, not just on McKennie, but just that their roster's not good enough to play a nice fluid attacking game. That's sort of what they've resorted to. So it would be nice. It'd be nice if they picked up a little attacking edge in the transfer window in January, and then McKennie still remains in the picture even as they improve. That's sort of what I'm really hoping happens.
Yeah, what I really want is to see McKennie in the midfield with some creative attackers out wide and up top that he can play with. We sure haven't gotten to see that yet.
All right.
Timmy Weah.
Weah into France. So Tim Weah is an interesting one because Tim Weah was responsible for about 90% of the optimism going into the fall season. After playing in the preseason camps for PSG, scoring a bunch of goals in their friendlies, and then really kind of surprisingly dressing and playing in their season opener, which was a glorified exhibition against Monaco, and scoring there, and then playing in their league opener and scoring in that game. I think we're all riding kind of a Tim Weah wave of optimism.
I think in some quarters that's true. I will say I was never 100% on the Tim Weah hype train. I gotta pat myself on the back for that.
So what were we expecting as sort of the worst case for young Tim Weah?
Mbappe's return to the lineup. Mbappe was still recovering from his World Cup triumph. Drops Weah to sixth on the depth chart, and he doesn't make the match day roster consistently until March. And that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, I think like I did some nap on the back of the napkin math. It's pretty complicated stuff, and figured out way I was probably closer to eighth or ninth, because there have been games where Mbappe would be injured or Neymar was suspended or Mbappe, anyway, where he still wasn't making the 18. So he's very clearly well outside of PSG's plans, and it sounds like he will be going out on loan in January.
Well, let's hope so. That's the hope. Hopefully he goes somewhere where he can play at a decent level of competition. There's all kinds of rumors out there. Hard to believe any of it, frankly. I think the latest I saw was Lazio or Fiorentina wanted him, and I don't know. I'm not buying that just yet.
Yeah, I mean, those are as credible as if I were to just name a team right now.
Tell me,
Yeah,
where's he headed, Greg? Chelsea.
he's going to PSV.
Yeah.
I'll believe it when PSG's social media account announces it, and then his destination team confirms.
That's right. Okay, next one. Tyler Adams. The very worst case, I think I wrote this, was that he wins the Supporters' Shield, loves his life in MLS, and European interest dries up. He did win
Well,
this.
you got some of you got some of that correct.
I think he loves his life in MLS too. They won this Red Bulls won the Supporters Shield. I think he loves his life in MLS or loved it. European interest did not dry up. He's off to RB Leipzig. It was confirmed a couple weeks ago. I think we've already discussed it on this podcast. I think the interesting question here is we touched on it briefly last week. You seem to think he's going to start immediately for what, the fourth best team in the Bundesliga?
I do, and my caveat here is I don't think he's in the starting 11 on that game on January 19th, their first game back from the winter break. But I think he's on the roster, and I think he plays, and then I think he starts from then on out. And it's just because, again, I think Tyler Adams has such a incredible like set of skills, like this subset of skills that you can't replicate. So whatever sort of weaknesses he might have relative to his internal competition at Leipzig, I think that his what he offers as far as covering ground just almost like can't be overcome.
All right, man. When you're optimistic, I'm not going to get in your way. I mean, he sure is smart and athletic and committed to his tasks, and that goes a long way for sure. The
Yeah,
smart part.
I'm not expecting to be reading about him playing for Leipzig's U23s.
Oh, no, definitely not that. Hopefully not
God.
that.
Yeah, I hope we
Knock
didn't
on wood.
just jinx it, because 6 months from now, when we revisit our revisit of the Cynic's Guide, we'll talk about how naive we were.
Yeah. That was me knocking on wood there, in case anybody's curious. All right. Next up is Kellen Acosta. What was the worst case scenario for him?
We were worried that he would he had just moved to Colorado, and we were worried that he was going to be a dominant player for Colorado, drag them up out of the bottom the depths into a team that just barely misses the MLS playoffs, but still couldn't garner any European interest. And actually, the worry was that despite doing some of those things, he would just remain a de facto starter for the national team, even though, again, that sort of dirty word in soccer development, even if he plateaued.
Yeah. I guess it's
And we don't
probably,
really know. Yeah, we
yeah,
don't really know where he stands with the national team.
it's too early to tell. He played fairly well for Colorado, and there's been no word of a transfer, not really no rumblings. It seems like he's probably sticking around in the Mile High City.
I imagine we'll see him in California in January.
For sure. Okay, now we grouped four players together: DeAndre Yedlin, John Brooks, Jonathan Amon, and Kenny Saif. And this was the can they stay healthy group. And our worst case scenario was that they couldn't. None of them would stay healthy and they'd spend the whole year injured. And I, you know, we weren't, we were, we batted 500 on this one, about.
So luckily, John Brooks has been fit. I mean, he's been a sort of an Iron Man. I think the only games he's missed for Wolfsburg are when he's been suspended. Yedlin, we were worried about him because his first or second game of the league, he had a really strange looking fall collision, and his knee looked like it was kind of messed up. He didn't even really miss the whole week of training. He was back training that week, missed one game, probably just as a precaution. And then he's been a steady fixture on Newcastle's game day lineups. Amon and Seth have been off and on.
And I would say, Seth and Eamon are both healthy right now, so they're both healthy. But Saif is seems to be out of the picture at Anderlecht. Like he hasn't been in the game day roster for two straight fixtures. Now it's possible he's injured and we don't know about it, but I think his role there has declined quite a bit. And there was some rumblings from the press in Belgium that he was a player they were looking to offload this January. Again, take it with a huge grain of salt. Eamon's been off and on. He's back to health. Nordsjælland didn't have a great season or a great first half of the season, and he hasn't b been able to put together, five, six matches in a row for quite some time. So that's been a little bit disappointing.
I think Eamon might have had some injury issues through a couple of US windows where he might have been able to get a look otherwise. But luckily Eamon did make his US first appearance and with the senior team and had a steady showing there, enough to keep us at least very excited about his future. Seth, on the other hand, seems to be falling farther and farther from at least from our sort of hype train station.
I mean, I was. It's. I'm. It's been well documented that I was pleased with Amon's performance against Peru. He's creative. He's a creative force. He's not a perfect player by any stretch, but he can create stuff. Brooks had a really good game. We're kind of jumping around here, but Brooks had a really good game last week against Nuremberg. His polish on the ball was sort of reinforced to me. He's the best passer of all our center backs by a wide distance. His mobility is still kind of a question, something we've talked about a lot on this podcast.
For what he's gone through over the last 24 months, this has been a great 6 months for John Brooks.
Absolutely.
3 months for John Brooks.
And Wolfsburg is doing pretty well too. They're top half of the table, and I think they've had like five or six unbeaten, something like that. Bobby Wood. What was the worst case scenario there?
So Bobby had just not just, but he was moving from relegated Hamburg on loan, I believe, to Hanover, and so we had no idea whether he was gonna what role he would play, whether he'd play at all. Worst case was that he was going to not be able to get on the field for Hanover the way he struggled to with Hamburg, or if he did get on, he wouldn't be able to score any goals.
And you know, he's done better than the worst case scenario, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, he's playing.
He's playing a lot. The good news is he scored three goals and assisted two through 800 minutes in all competitions, which is hardly world-class rate of return, but it's not terrible. And the bad news is Hanover is dead last in the Bundesliga, and he's at this point staring two straight seasons of relegation in the face as a player.
Yeah, and I think he has been coming off the bench in their last couple of games. I'm hopeful that again the crowded schedule has something to do with that. He didn't play at all last weekend against Bayern in a 4-0 drubbing. I'm hoping that that's essentially Hanover just conceding certain games. If you're going to play four games in a short amount of time, you might just concede that you're not going to beat Bayern, so you're going to save up for a few more competitive of the more competitive games. But we'll see Tuesday or Wednesday when they're out there again.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised at all if he starts. Moving north in the Bundesliga, Josh Sargent. Worst case scenario was he never sees the pitch for Werder Bremen as they go on a run and everyone stays healthy. And next year he's in a do or die summer battle for a real spot in the first team roster. What happened?
He's made it, Bells. He's finally made it. I think you were actually kind of optimistic that he'd have about 100 minutes by December. He's up to what, 16, 17?
Oh, I think it's more than that. I think he has, he got 10 this past weekend, and the weekend before that he got what, 30? I think
so. The important thing is he finally got on the field. We waited a long time refreshing Bremen's Twitter feed like every 30 seconds every week. And we kind of, it was a long sort of drawn out teasing process, but he's finally made it. He appeared, he scored on his very first touch. And then he got another call the following week. So things are looking good. Things are progressing. And it seems like we just have to continue to be patient.
Okay. Yeah. And I think it's kind of interesting that he was put in that Dortmund game on Saturday ahead of Claudio Pizarro. Don't you think? I mean, I'm not going to try to read too much into it, but they were down 2-1. And in that second half, Bremen was actually playing Dortmund pretty even. They had a chance to get a draw at Dortmund in front of that yellow wall, 10 minutes to go. And they bring in Sargent off the bench with their last substitution when Claudio Pizarro is sitting there too. I mean, that's gotta mean something.
Yeah. It's a good vote of confidence. Cause it was kind of assumed that he's sort of simply on there because some other guys were, out with illness.
I mean, that is true. Jojo Agustin was ill, and that was why he was on the matchday squad, if you take the Werder Bremen Twitter feed at face value. So it's maybe it's just worth running through who he's technically behind on the depth chart. This Osako, who was injured and was the reason Sargent got to play in the game a week earlier, and then Jojo Agustin, Max Kruse, Martin Harnik, Rashica, who is that kind of winger forward who looked really good both of these games, and then probably Pizarro.
Yeah, so, usually depth Pizarro. So then you have to ask if it's sort of situational as far as like what the tactics of the day are or who they're up against. That in some way Sargent was considered the better option than Pizarro. So or if this is just sort of the first sign of that torch being passed.
Right. That's what,
which would be kind of cool.
Would be very cool. Yeah. So yeah, I guess the good thing is he beat the worst case scenario. He beat it handily. Moving on. Ready to move on?
Yeah, let's get to our lone brigade.
Yeah, the lone brigade is Matt Miazga, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Eric Palmer-Brown, Shaq Moore, and Chris Richards. What's the worst case scenario for these guys?
So the worst case, and at the time we recorded we were like one week into the season for most of these leagues. And at the time, none of them had appeared on game day rosters for their loan clubs. So the worst case was that they combined for 0 minutes for the entire fall. They get called back to their parent clubs in January and just sort of sit in this accounting liability limbo. What ended up happening turned out to be not that far from that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, Miazga met his worst-case scenario face-to-face when there was a coaching change at Nantes. And, you know, he did play. He played, I think he started 4 or 5 matches in a row and then had a couple really bad performances, and he's been essentially dropped from the team.
Nantes in general had kind of a horrendous start. I think they'd only won one game in their first 6 or 7, and that's when Miazga sort of met his end. And since then, they've been kind of not necessarily flying, but they've got 4 wins out of their last 6 or 7 games since the new manager took over. So it doesn't seem like the new manager is going to be thinking he's made any mistakes with his personnel decisions.
No. I didn't realize that they'd been so successful since the divorce with Miazga. CCV, he's now started 3 out of 15 games for Swansea. I don't know if it's not 0 minutes, but he's hardly become a regular there. He comes off the bench occasionally.
Yeah, he's cl pretty clearly like a third choice out of their center back pool for a team that plays two center backs.
Yeah, I guess there's not that much more to say about it. EPB seemed to be breaking through at NAC Breda. He had three straight starts a few weeks ago, but he still only started about a third of matches for a very, very bad team. I think they're still bottom of the table.
And they and NAC Breda actually do play three center backs most of the time, so he's struggling to break in or consistently be in the first team lineup. I know he didn't play over the weekend, even with the three center back spots to fight for.
Yeah, that's not great. And then Shaq Moore, I mean, his situation is the worst of all. He's not being paid by his club, and they look like they might fold before the winter break. He's started, about one fifth of their matches. He did start, I think, two in a row recently, so that's good. And they got a 1-0 win over somebody respectable in the Spanish second division with him at right back. So that things may be sort of turning a corner for him, personally, but for the club, it looks like dark times indeed. So he may be recalled and taken back to Levante. I guess we
Yeah,
don't know.
we did not have financial ruin on our scenario list. So, yeah, hopefully somehow ends up back at the in the first division and ends up like just being used because they've got him. Well, we've got him, let's use him.
I mean, he's been able to be somewhat respectable in La Liga at right back. He's not that great, but he can get the job done in a pinch. And then finally, Chris Richards, on loan to Bayern Munich. He's been really good for the U19s and the US U20s. He was a key part of that defense that won the U20 CONCACAF championship, but he hasn't gotten near the Bayern first team, which, in retrospect isn't all that surprising.
Now we'd gotten our hopes up a little bit there because of that preseason tour for Bayern where he was playing. But yeah, it looks like he might be back at FC Dallas, and it sounds like they might not be interested in selling him on to Bayern.
Yeah, he was
And
at.
I don't know that Bayern are going to meet whatever the sell on clause is to force Dallas's hand.
Yeah, I would love to know what that number is. Ives Skolarčyk reported that Bayern was ready to buy him for 1.25 million. ThirdDegree.net, the FC Dallas blogger, said that is probably not the number that is in the buy clause in the loan. Richards was at the announcement of Luchi Gonzalez as the new coach for FC Dallas, and it seemed like a carefully tailored group of youngsters who were up there standing with him for photos. Richards, Paxton Pomykal, Reggie Cannon, and Thomas Roberts, who's also been training at Bayern some this fall.
So yeah, trying to indicate the sort of the future of the team as well as the future direction of the team. This is what we're going to do. We're going to produce these guys and win championships.
Yep, we're going to develop stars, is what Lucci said. Not going to buy them. All right, let's move on. Anthony Robinson. What was the worst case scenario for the greatest left back in the history of American soccer?
So Robinson is sort of separated from the other loan brigades because by the time of our recording last August, he'd already played like three games for Wigan in their ridiculous championship schedule. So the worst case was it was clear that he was going to be playing for them. The worst case was that he would not really show any signs of improvement, that he would remain sort of mistake prone or prone to big mistakes. And that's kind of it's kind of what we've seen. I don't watch a lot of Wigan, I will be honest. But we have a lot of data from the US, from his time in the US jersey, and he has certainly been mistake prone.
Yeah, that's for sure. I don't think, he had an injury in training in the US camp around the England and Italy games that has essentially ended his fall. He didn't really get a chance to prove that wrong. And I don't think he's going to be back until early spring, late winter, something like that.
Yeah, that's what they were kind of hinting at. And the good thing is, I guess the good takeaway from Robinson's 3 months of performances is that while he does look mistake prone, he absolutely has delivered on the attacking side of the equation. His reputation is not wrong here. He gets forward at speed, and he delivers a decent ball in. He's created a lot of dangerous pit plays for the United States. I know that's what he did on day one with Wigan on to start his loan out on a good foot, but he's definitely been an offensive injection when the U.S. is playing with him on the outside left.
Hopeful and excited to see him get back and be healthy again. Keaton Parks, that's our next name here. I think I wrote this worst case scenario, and it turns out it was wildly optimistic. 10 goals, 10 assists in the Portuguese second division, few to 0 minutes with the Benfica first team. Too much of a midfield tweener, a la Gideon Zulalem, Emerson Heinemann, Joe Corona, etc., etc. Not enough forward bite to justify his softness as a defender. See you in Scandinavia, Keaton. So, what has actually happened?
There's no question that you wrote that. Anything that includes double digit goals and assists as a worst case scenario was not penned by me. From what I understand, he is playing regularly for Benfica B. I mean, that we had hoped there was some hope that he would be playing for the Benfica first team this year,
Nope.
and that is definitely not materialized. The stat line, I believe, is where you're going to be most disappointed for his Benfica B performance. I think he's at one assist in the season with no goals. Even if he is playing, have you been able to watch any Benfica B footage?
No, but I know what you're about to say, and go ahead and say it. Yeah.
Well, it seems the word is he's playing as much more of a six, whereas last year he might have split some time even between like 8 and 10. But I remember last year on the highlights he'd put together, he was at least a real threat on set pieces, being what, 6 foot 4?
Yeah, he's huge. Yep.
And so it doesn't seem like that threat is as threatening this fall.
No. Yeah, that is the word, that he's playing as a six, and that Benfica is trying to develop his deep lying orchestration ability and his defensive chops. So maybe that explains the stat line, 'cause he was at 10 goals, 10 assists last year for Benfica B. Yeah. But he's not been in the 18 at all for Benfica. I guess we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed for the spring. See what happens.
Yeah, we want a you want a loan for him, right? You want him to move? That's kind of what I want. I want him to move.
Yeah, I mean, if there's no chance that he's going to get in the 18 for Benfica in the spring, then I hope he moves. I mean, if you remember, his time with the first team was mostly in the second half of the season last year. So, I don't know. I don't know what the calendar considerations are there, but yeah, a loan. Short answer, a loan would probably be good at this point.
All right, well, let's move to some kind of a destination that maybe Keaton Parks will be loaned to if and talk about our Scandinavian group.
Yes, Manuel Sabi, Andrea Novakovic. Now we know the Netherlands are not Scandinavia. Just let us cheat on that one, you guys. Roman Gaal, Dwayne Holmes. He's in League One in England, I believe. Lyndon Gooch, Julian Green in 2 Bundesliga, Brennan Heinsieck in the, I think he's in the Eredivisie, right?
Is he? He's in Belgium. Didn't he just play against Ethan Horvath over the
Oh,
weekend?
yeah. Heinsieck is in Belgium.
Belgium.
That's right.
Belgium.
Yeah. Heinsieck in Belgium and Emerson Heinemann in Scotland. So definitely not all Scandinavia, but sort of a similar, cut from a similar cloth. The worst case was they all continue to make the score sheet every weekend and they get the call from the national team and they're absolute rubbish. I think you wrote that, Greg. So.
Yeah, because at the time these guys were kind of hot. Like Sabi was scoring goals like crazy. Gaul came out of nowhere was scoring goals. Lyndon Gooch was terrorizing League One. So yeah, the concern was that essentially they were just sort of exploiting weak leagues for stats, and that none of them would be useful in a national team setting.
Yeah. And I mean, let's see who among them has gotten a call up. I guess it would just be Gall and Green lately. And I mean, Novakovic has been called up but barely played with the national team. And then the rest of them didn't get called up.
We're waiting on some of these other guys.
Yeah, Scott Sabi, but, like you said, like you mentioned, Sabi scored some bangers early in the season in Denmark for Hobro, but has since cooled off. I don't think he's scored since early September. Novakovic had 4 goals in 9 appearances before going down with an injury, so that's respectable. He had an assist over the weekend, came back to health recently. So I wouldn't give up on Novakovic yet. Gall is having a pretty good year in Sweden, but wasn't rated by Sarakin in the most recent USMNT camp. Go ahead.
Well, just I'm taking the Sarakin grain of salt there, because remember when Eamon went in, Eamon didn't even dress for their first game, started the second game. Sarakin seems to have this situation where he's not eager to give guys their first game. Anthony Robinson in his first camp didn't appear, just didn't get into a game. I think it was something similar with, I don't remember, but in any event, Sarakin seems like he's loath to give that first appearance out. He wants to essentially, or he's got like a very gradual process to ease guys in. So it might be that Gall wasn't good enough, or it might just be sort of Sarakin's playing the long game and saying, we'll get you into the camp so you can kind of go through this. And then the next time you come in, that's when you actually get to show us what you've got in the game.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Not that Sarakin will be around for it.
That's a good point. Gooch is having a good year in League One, like you mentioned. Sunderland is top of the table. I think they're with their 50,000-seat stadium, they really need to get back to at least the championship. Green having a typically quiet year in 2 Bundesliga, but generally he plays. I'm not tracking Holmes or Heinzeik very closely. Maybe you are. Heinemann has had a good last few weeks, and we'll talk about that more later, I think.
Yeah, Heinzeik and Holmes sort of make it on here because they're at least doing it in leagues that when other youngsters are doing it, we're giving them sort of the love. So it's like, well, if we're giving Ethan Horvath love for playing in the Belgian league, then Brandon Heinzeik starting every game at center back probably deserves a little bit of love too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we should probably mention Horvath here, who has been maybe the best. What's the word? He said
trajectory. Yeah.
The best trajectory of anybody in the pool over the last 3 months. He was named to the group stage best 11 in the Champions League, I believe. Or maybe it was the Champions League team of the week. And he's posted 3 clean sheets in the Champions League. He started, I think, 6 matches in a row for Club Bruges in the league. And is doing well. He seems to be the first choice goalkeeper there now. That's a big deal.
Yeah, he's up to 10 straight starts. Before he couldn't buy a minute for Bruges. So I don't know what's changed. There were a lot of sort of rumors surrounding that situation with the club and various sort of like corrupt decision making processes going on. but he's started 10 straight games and he's had 6 clean sheets in those 10 games. So it's been a really good November, December for Ethan Horvath. He's had a great showing for the national team.
That's true. Yeah, he had a great game against Italy. Was unlucky to not get a clean sheet there. Is unlucky the right word there? I don't think so, no.
It's unlucky for Horvath. Yeah. Everyone else was lucky that it wasn't 6 goals.
Exactly.
And Horvath played a key part of that.
It's not a coincidence, I don't think, that there was that. Wasn't there news that of match fixing in Belgium in October or something?
I think a bunch of teams got raided, including Horvath.
Yeah, and then after that, he's basically been the first choice keeper. So the law is on his side.
You can draw whatever conclusions you want from that.
All right, let's move on to the youngsters abroad, the sort of Yanks abroad academy. Nick Taitagwe, Christopher Gloucester, Sebastian Soto, Richie Ledesma, and Alex Mendez are the names I have here. But there are many others that we've talked about before.
Well, I was going to say, do we want to talk about the ones who actually sort of emerged? Because out of these guys, Soto's doing great. He's moved up to first team training over the winter is sort of the rumor.
Yeah.
But the one who actually kind of exploded, the one sort of in competition with Horvath, I think, for recent trajectory, might actually be like Sergiño Dest.
Yeah, that's right. Sergiño Dest, I don't even have him written here. there's no place for Serginho Dest in an episode about worst case scenarios. He was really good for the U20s. He looked like the modern fullback of the future for the U.S. When the U20s won the CONCACAF championship. And then he immediately went back to Holland and has been playing in the Eredivisie, the second division in Dutch football, for Young Ajax, which is typically a league leader in the second division.
So yeah, so Dest has had a great fall, and then Ledesma and Mendes haven't had an opportunity yet to play because they're not registered. They'll have their first sort of official competitions in January.
Right.
The other guy that we kind of mentioned back in August and kind of in throwaway fashion, almost as a cautionary tale, was Haji Wright, who had sort of spent a year and a half in sort of loan purgatory from Schalke. And then it turns out Haji Wright has been called on and started multiple games in the Bundesliga this year.
Right. Well, he started one game.
And started once, yeah.
Didn't play well. But then he came on at halftime over the weekend. And I didn't see the game because it wasn't available on any of my streaming services. But he apparently played pretty well. If you look at the Schalke subreddit, where they don't pull any punches on American players, they're often critical of Wright and McKennie. They seem to grudgingly acknowledge that he was okay. He was put in a decent shift. So that's surprising to me. I mean, shocking, I'd almost say.
Yeah, exactly. So now Haji Wright's gone from a cautionary tale to like a tale of inspiration. because he's 20, so he's not like old, he's not past it, but he's also had 2 years, you know, of not really, you know, if Josh Sargent spent two years never moving up from the U23s, a lot of his hype would probably evaporate.
Oh man, the pain would be unbearable.
Well, it would be for 6 months, and then you would transfer all of the hype to some other 17-year-old, so... that's kind of what's happened with Haji Wright. All of his hype is transferred over to Josh Sargent and Serginho Dest. And so it's almost like this weird foreign feeling to see his name pop back up on a game day roster for the first team. And we don't know what to do with it. Like, is he now in consideration for a national team call up? That seems a stretch.
I don't know. If you go by first team minutes as the main barometer, then he is he's pretty much an automatic call up now. I don't know, it's funny. I think of t-shirt ideas sometimes with what we're talking about, and you could make a t-shirt that says the hype is always transferable, and and then have like the face of Freddie Adu, and then the face of, you know, maybe like four faces with arrows pointing from one to the next. Who would it be? Freddie Adu, somebody else.
God,
somebody else.
It might be Juan Agudelo.
Yeah, Juan Agudelo, and then Keaton Parks, and then Haji Wright or something.
Jordan Morris to Haji Wright.
Yeah, there you go. We'll order them up.
Yeah, we'll work. We'll get our design team on it.
25 bucks a piece. Yeah, like you said, Soto has distinguished himself in the Bundesliga U19 league, and the reports all seem to be pretty good. Ty Tagwe is back to health, and you know he was christened with a USMNT video over the weekend. Looked
that's when you know you've made it.
Well, if there's footage, then there will be a video. He looked okay. He didn't blow my doors off, but he looked pretty good.
But again, if Haji Wright gets a start for Schalke in a Bundesliga game, then anything's possible for Nick de Tagwai. And who else is over there? I feel like there's one more Schalke there. Zion Jones,
yeah. I mean, one thing about Tedesco, he does not give an shit about like how much pedigree you have. He will throw you on the field. And so I think there's a chance Ty Tagwai will get a chance, if you catch my drift. And Gloucester was pretty good for the U20s. He's a little harder to track than Soto because he's kind of back and forth between the U23 squad and the U19 squad at Hanover. But I think he's been getting plenty of minutes this fall, and I don't think there's too much to be sad about with this group, really.
No, I definitely don't think so. No one seems to have regressed.
Yeah. And then we're gonna get more into Ledesma. Mendez is up for Young Player of the Year, Young American Player of the Year, and I think it's doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that he will win that award.
They're going to name the award after him.
That's right. All right, last category is MLS youngsters. Andrew Carlton, Jalen Lindsey, Gianluca Busio, George Bello. What was the worst case scenario for these guys?
So we were talking about the MLS guys who hadn't really established themselves as starters or even sort of bit players in MLS. And the worst case was essentially that they never would, that they would lose out to either the next crop of youngsters, or they just could never beat out the vets, the 25 to 28-year-old vets in their spots.
What would you say happened?
Kind of a mixed bag, right? Lindsay and Busio got some playing time for Sporting KC. Their time kind of started to disappear a little bit as we got into the postseason.
Right.
Bello got a start in a I would call it a key game for Atlanta United because they were still chasing the supporter's shield.
Yes.
And he did well. He acquitted himself really well, scored a pretty awesome highlight goal. No real defensive lapses to speak of for him. Andrew Carlton is sort of the odd man out in a sense that he was very much the odd man out with Atlanta United.
Yeah, he ultimately got the same amount of MLS minutes as Busio, but the difference is that Busio was in the 18 for just about every match day from midseason to when SKC got knocked out of the playoffs. Carlton, on the other hand, was very much in and out of the 18 for Atlanta, and then wasn't in the 18 for all but one of their playoff games, and then he got banned from MLS Cup. He was not allowed to be there, and then he was not allowed to be at the parade.
I'm
We've already
trying to
talked about it.
imagine. I'm trying to imagine us back in August saying worst case scenario for Andrew Carlton is that he barely plays and then gets kicked out of the parade when
Right.
Atlanta ride through town to celebrate their cup.
Yeah, we've already covered it. We talked about it last week, but it was a striking absence. And we'll see what happens with him in the off season and early next spring. Anybody else
All
we
right.
should be talking about in MLS? MLS? I mean,
For worst case scenarios.
I guess Mark McKenzie, we didn't have a worst case scenario for him, but he remained a regular starter for the Philadelphia Union. So did Austin Trusty right up until they were bounced. And
Yeah.
Chris Durkin got some quality minutes down the stretch for DC United when they were chasing a playoff spot. So that's good.
Reggie Cannon got his first cap to go along with like a very steady MLS season where I think he was excellent. I feel like maybe Justin Glad is kind of the one who, I don't know if you'd say he had his ups and downs. I mean, everyone kind of does, but he didn't impose himself in the conversation for the youngsters in MLS. Is that fair?
That's fair, yeah. And then he was dropped from the starting lineup in the playoffs at least once and maybe twice, which is weird because he was a automatic starter for the whole season. I don't know. I hope Glad can get in with the national team for January. Seems like he's a natural fit for that, but the fact that he was dropped from the starting lineup a couple times in the playoffs does. It's kind of a red flag.
Yeah, I guess maybe Danilo Acosta is another speaking of red flags, one of the kids whose worst case scenario may have kind of come true. He got a little like he got a few run outs, right, for
Yeah, early in the
RSL,
season. Early in the
but then
season.
never came back. So since his January call up, where he was then sent home before the actual game, definitely, things haven't been going as well as US fans would have hoped for Danilo.
And Danilo's really an intriguing one because he's a good left back. I mean, at least at his best, he's a good left back. He's tough. He's a good passer. Best wishes for him and Justin.
All right, but yeah, that's it. I think that's everyone. It'll be I'll be I'm, I kind of liked our worst case scenarios. I think next year will be a lot. I think we'll be a lot more cynical if we do this again in August.
Yeah. I mean, would you say our worst case scenarios were generally like, if you want to put our accuracy at a percentage point, what would it be?
If you want to like talk about the realistic worst case scenarios we started to give, I'd say about 75% of them hit. And the other 25% were split between things going better than we expected and actually things going worse than we expected.
Yeah, that seems like a fair way to think of it. All right, let's come back and do some short corners in a second. All right, we're back with some short corners. First one is Richie Ledesma to the Netherlands. He's on a plane as we speak to have his medical and hopefully get a contract signed with PSV Eindhoven. I think this is a really big deal. Everybody knows I'm a big Ledesma fan, but let me go into it in some detail, Greg, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Okay, as Brian Schreta pointed out, Ledesma signing with PSV would be a little bit bigger deal than all the examples of young Americans signing with Bundesliga academies, though those are all great things too. The reason it's different is that Dutch rules require Eredivisie clubs to pay non-EU players under 21 about $225,000 a year. So this isn't a garden variety flyer on a prospect, even though it is a free transfer. It's a real investment. And I know I've got this reputation for hyping Ledesma, so I want to be as specific as I can about why I think he's such a good prospect. He's kind of a diluted blend of Christian Pulisic and Darlington Nagby on the ball. I think that's a good way of explaining it. He can glide past people, and he is ball secure. He's not as explosive as Pulisic, not as ball secure as Nagby, but really a blend of the two. And what's exciting is that he appears to have more bite in the attacking third than either of them. He's calmer than Pulisic. He's more aggressive than Nagby. He also has great passing range. He can hit the 40-yard ball on a dime. He can pass and move in tight space with the best of them. And I think a lot of people don't know that much about him because he hasn't been able to showcase himself with the U20s the way, say, like Alex Mendez has because he was injured the last couple months. And he also didn't, never made a first team appearance with RSL because he left right at the beginning of the summer. I do suspect, had he stuck around, we would have seen a first team debut for him this summer or early this fall. But he came on the scene so suddenly, like 12 months ago, nobody knew who he was. And then he got called into a U19 camp last January and then played his way immediately into the U20s. And then he got on with the Real Monarchs in the spring, played some USL matches. 5 matches in, I think anybody who watched those games was like, well, the cat's out of the bag. He's really good. And the European move was bound to happen. So it's all happened very quickly. That's why I think a lot of people don't know his game as well. But of all the youngsters over there right now, I think he's right near the top. He's right
So,
near the
Bells,
top.
we just had like a long list of scenarios that we were talking about where things tended to go, if not poorly, definitely not sort of ideally. Richie Ledesma arrives in Netherlands in January and gets cleared to play. What do the next 4 months for him look like? You got to project it out, sort of using the experience we just had with our worst case scenarios. What's going to happen here?
He'll start playing with young, I mean, realistically, he'll start playing with young PSV in February. He's still coming back from a foot injury. The worst case scenario is that his foot injury lingers and he re-injures it or something. But assuming he stays healthy, I don't think PSV is signing him just to have him play with young PSV. I think he's going to probably make his debut toward the end of the season when the table is kind of settled, and then he'll be competing for a regular first team spot in 2019. I think that's a realistic scenario.
But you think he's going to at some point take the field for the first team?
I do. I think he'll take the field for the first team before the end of the season. Not a ton of minutes, but he'll get an appearance here or there.
All right. I'm going to keep you on this one. I know we got to get through these corners and they're very short, but I'm really intrigued by the Ledesma enthusiasm you have. So he gets into Young PSV immediately. And if he's playing well there, does he get a March call-up?
No.
Okay, so March call-up, essentially there's nothing he can do that gets him a March call-up short of PSV realizing they're sitting on gold and putting him immediately into the first team lineup?
Yes, that's the only way it happens. And I think he's going to be happy to play with the U-20s in the World Cup. I think Tab Ramos will be happy to have him if he's healthy and, you know, playing well in the same league that Serginho Dest is playing well in. That's fine with me. I don't think we need to rush him into the national team.
Okay. Well, the only rush I see is because, again, the Gold Cup is almost upon us, it feels like. So if he's doing well for Young PSV already from February to March, because then the question is, if he ends up playing for the first team for PSV, does that put him in discussion for the Gold Cup?
Yeah, I mean, if he's playing with the first team for PSV and then he goes to the World Cup in Poland and just destroys it, which I think, like, a midfield of him and Mendes is going to be unbelievably fun to watch, you know, assuming they're both healthy and playing to their ability. I don't know. I don't see why he wouldn't get a call up to the Gold Cup, but I feel like we're getting way sort of far afield. All right. I don't know.
I wanted to see what was on the horizon or what was the potential here.
I'll be happy if he makes two appearances. I'll be happy if he makes one appearance for PSV's first team this spring, and then stays healthy and comes flying into the U-20 World Cup in Poland.
All right, that's good. That's a good place to look. That's I feel like a good outcome to hope for. All right, and thank God for it being 2018, where we can have these moves confirmed by kids. Snapchats.
Yeah, his Instagram, he's on a plane. But there's also that PSV watcher, Rick Elfrink, who tweets about this stuff. He said he'll start with Young PSV. You know, the implication being he's not gonna like stay with Young PSV unless he totally crashes and burns.
Unless he's outclassed, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Impossible. Okay. All right. That's Ledesma's short corner.
All right, next up. Emerson Heineman, we talked about him briefly earlier. He's making a little bit of a push with Hibs in Scotland. Still early to argue that he's in the USMNT player pool, but the news lately has been good. Came on at halftime and helped them win a match a week ago, and then he started and went 90 as they defeated then league leaders Celtic 2-0, helped key the move for the game's opening goal. Heineman's somebody who a lot of people have been excited about for a long time, and his struggles with Bournemouth to get on the first team and going on loan and getting hurt and stuff have been a cause of great consternation, I think, in U.S. soccer Twitter. But he's 22. If he can sort of take this momentum and put together a quality second half of the season, stay healthy, maybe he can push his way into a bigger club in the summer. I just want to point out that starting and going 90 against Celtic, helping his team to a 2-0 win, is a pretty big deal.
Right, right. And what's crazy, and it's kind of the same thing with like a Keaton Parks. I've never watched Emerson Heineman. We have so many legal ways of watching soccer now that I never really resort to the illegal streams where you might actually be able to check him out on, and I'm sure people do. But I've literally have never seen him play. I don't think I've seen Emerson Heineman play a single minute of soccer. Have you watched him?
Yeah, I watched him a little bit back in 2017, spring of 2017, when he was with Rangers, and I watched one of his preseason games this summer with Bournemouth. He's a clever player. He's a good passer. He likes to get on the ball. He's kind of an attacking eight, and he can score goals. The problem has been like his defensive prowess and maybe, making a mistake on the ball that springs a counterattack. If I had to like point his struggles down to two things, it'd be those two things. He's a
Well,
good he's a
that's a
good
little bit
player.
Keaton. Isn't that a little bit Keaton Parks-ish? And I know you kind of mentioned Heinemann and some other guys as comparison points for Keaton Parks. Is that kind of the rub then? Is that
Yeah, I think Keaton Parks is not a bad comparison. I mean, Heinemann is small, He's like I think he's like 5'9" or something,
okay.
whereas Parks is 6'4", so they look so different on the field. I think Heinemann's a little more mobile, a little more of a pass and move kind of guy, whereas Parks is more an orchestrator. But yeah,
Okay,
that's
so
a decent comparison.
we'll just keep eyes on Heinemann, and by that I mean keep eyes on the number of minutes he plays and whether he's in the lineup or not, because again, not really watching him play, and see if that ever translates into a national team call up.
It's not impossible, I guess. It's fair to say. Sebastian Soto, next one. Soto will, according to Grant Wall, be with the first team in Hanover in January in their preseason. This doesn't mean he'll be playing with the first team in the spring, but they may be looking for answers to climb out of the relegation zone. Something to watch. That's all.
That's great. It's a opportunity.
Yeah, that's how Christian Pulisic broke in for Dortmund. He played with their first team in January, and then under Thomas Tuchel made his first appearances. Champions
Champions
League.
League draw this morning.
Yeah. Schalke and Weston McKennie will face Manchester City.
What is the possessions like stat going to be on that game?
95-5, probably. But on the other hand, they play two games. If the stars align, it's not impossible that Schalke could beat Manchester City. Deeply, deeply implausible, but
I thought you were literally just saying, but hey, it's still two games. Like he's got at least two more games left.
oh, I see. Yeah, those games aren't for a while either. They're in like late February, early March. So the fixtures schedule is not going to be as congested. And
No,
then
it's a good Champions League for Schalke. They took advantage of their easy group and got through, and they will have had a good tournament as they go out to Manchester City.
yeah, that is very, very, very much the most likely outcome. And Dortmund and Christian Pulisic will face Tottenham. Tottenham had an easy time with Dortmund in the group last season, but I think it'll be different this time. Everyone in Germany and many of us in the US will be disappointed if Dortmund don't advance. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I feel like Dortmund have to. This is sort of like the year to go for it, or the year to think you have a chance at it, because Bayern really seem to be down, Real Madrid seem to be down, so it's you just have to be able to undo City, and then you have to be able. I guess Spurs end up being one of the teams that are going to be thinking the exact same thing, is that this is the year to pull it off.
Right. In the Europa League, a couple other Americans found out their destinies today. Ethan Horvath and Club Brugge will face Red Bull Salzburg in the Europa League in the round of 32. It'll be the bunker versus the Blitzkrieg. So I imagine Horvath will get plenty of action. And then Malmo fa faces Chelsea. So Roman Gaul will go up against Sarri Ball.
That'll be a good one again. Roman Gaul, they're off. Their season's off. So, when do you know when Sweden starts back up?
I don't know. Probably, yeah, I don't know. I don't even want to
All
guess.
right. I feel like it's their participation in Europa League makes it unlikely that Gaul gets called up in January.
Yeah. Which also they don't have to release him, and I don't see why they
Right.
would. So let's move on to the last short corner. We've got some coaching news. Dave Sarokin is taking the job at North Carolina FC in USL. That's marginally interesting on its own. It's more interesting because it means he won't be the U23 coach for the Olympics, something that's been sort of bandied about as a possibility. The U23 Olympics team is as the name might suggest, a U23 team with like three exceptions you can make for older players.
Once you're actually in the Olympics, yeah, but not during the qualifying stages.
I see. Okay. So it's still an open question who's going to be managing that squad. I guess it could be Berhalter and his staff just sort of doing double duty. That kind of makes sense to me.
What
As
you're saying,
opposed.
like his like one of his assistants runs it, or are you saying Berhalter actually goes and runs the Olympic training sessions, the U23 training sessions?
Yeah, some combination of the two, like his assistant doing it under his authority, and then him coming in and handling some of it. It's not like, well, I don't know. We'll
That
see.
would be a departure though, right? I don't think the U.S. hasn't operated that way that we know of. I mean,
I don't
who
know.
was
You
running
tell
it under
me.
Clinton? I don't think so. I think Caleb Porter had it for one of the failed cycles, and it doesn't seem to me like Caleb Porter would be the type who's going to coach, but also have Jürgen Klinsmann in the office telling him what sessions he's going to run.
Okay, so maybe that's not going to happen. Maybe it'll be Tab Ramos. Maybe it'll be somebody else, Omen Namazi, somebody I haven't even thought of. Interesting news on the Ramos front. We know he won't be taking the FC Dallas job because Luchy Gonzalez took it. He was the academy director at FC Dallas, and he was introduced to the press in a press conference on Monday. Talked a big game about developing stars and striking a balance between getting 3 points and giving players opportunities, young players opportunities. There's a lot of US eligible talent in that Dallas academy. So if he makes good on that, that's a really positive thing.
Yeah, let's have him make good on that. Let's have the MLS get rid of the homegrown radius, and let's have all of the Texas talent filter into FC Dallas's academy.
Centralize, centralize, centralize. Yeah.
Just mean because Houston's a disaster, so let's
Oh
get him into
yeah.
Dallas.
Speaking of Houston, there's a center back there. I'll just make this a little short corner on its own. Eric McHugh, who J.R. Eskilsson tweeted that McHugh was getting interest from Sweden. He's a dual national for their U20 squad. And I saw some highlights of McHugh this morning, and he looks really good. And we need center back depth on the U20 squad. So if you're listening, Tab, pull him up on YouTube. Check him out. See if he might fit your plans. Anything else going on, Greg?
No, that's soccer right now.
Soccer right now. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see ya.